Hey, whoa, what do we got here? Are you looking for some kind of podcast or something here? What you got? Yeah, you can donate to the show. Hey, welcome to the Six of Cups. This is a round table that is about relaxed, fun, open topics, just... You know, come as you are, as some rock band, something. So this is the intro. Holy moly. Brother Joe, knocking it out of the park to on this one. Same with Miguel. I know it was hard for Miguel to get on the mic. This is new, this podcasting thing for him, but he did great. And I just want to also, another seasoned veteran podcasters, No Agenda, give a shout out and thanks to them, the Podfather, Cranky Geek. The value for value model is what we use on this show. So if you get a lot out of the show, if you get a little bit out, you get whatever you get. And please do donate. You can donate each episode. You can donate if you like the Six of Swords. You can donate on that one. You can even figure out a way to say, oh, hey, I'm donating in honor of the episode you did with blank, Tracy Twyman, for example. That was a meaningful episode to me. It just came to mind because she's my sixes episode. Now my heart's a little sad right now. Anyways, well, any episode you like, if you like it and you can donate and you like it that much, you donate it for it again. It's kind of cool that we have the... catalog, library of old episodes. Try to make them good. So with that said, no need for furthermore introduction. By way of rite of passage, you are now at the threshold of this show. Hey, and welcome back to the Six of Cups. This is Six of Cups episode, I believe, 7. That's a lucky number in many traditions, and for good reason. But neither here nor there is that reason. Tonight we have with us Brother Joe DeZerman.
Hello.
And we also have Miguel Connor.
Whoops. There you are. Sorry. I'm getting used to this mute button over here. Glad to be here, my friend. Glad to be on your turf.
I would like to welcome both our guests this evening, and we're just going to start out by saying that it's really weird stuff going on with all these shootings and such. It's kind of like, I know people like Lauren Coleman tend to cover these kind of things in good detail. It seems like there's like a metaphysical rash. A lot of people try to conspiracy theorize it and this, that, the other thing, but for what it is, it's a rash of violence. It's some kind of bursting up in a culture. It could mean this. It could be used to this. But I just want to know what your guys' thoughts are in general in the bigger Gnostic or, you know, chaos magic or even, dare I say, just a free-thinking way of looking at this. What do you, Miguel, why don't you start us off?
Oh, boy. Yes. I was actually thinking about that today. In fact, I'm thinking writing an intro as we talked before the show. I interviewed a really high-ranking Freemason from Europe, and we were discussing again the Illuminati and the concepts of Luciferianism, Illuminism, Platonism, and we really both agree the problem is we need a spiritual solution. I mean, I think there is no other, and it might be too late for that. I mean, the whole idea, Trump's not going to save you. Pelosi's not going to save you. Gun control's not going to save you. Banning.
Miguel? You just cut out there, brother. Joe, can you hear him?
No, I can't.
No.
But by engineering.
Miguel.
And, we also, yeah.
The thing cut out a few seconds ago there.
Oh, I was getting inspired, man.
No, keep going with it though.
All right, yeah, we need to look at our collective shadow. We need to look at also the archetypal forces behind the founding of this country with the founding fathers, and it really keeps going back to the Hermetic ideals, the Platonic ideals, the mystic Christian ideals, and all those esoteric light-bringing ideals, and we are cut off from them. And like I said, we need a spiritual solution to look at our shadow, to look at inside of ourselves, to look at our world of symbols as a collective and each as an individual. We also need initiation. Unfortunately, young men and women are not being initiated into the mysteries, so they cannot understand that life is a mystery and it is a horror, and they can do something about it, again, instead projecting their shadow out there. And unfortunately, the Arkans have got us on a divide and conquer kind of mentality. So we assume that the easiest thing to do is to blame whatever other manufactured other side is, the other party, the other race, the other gender, whatever it is. So we are in a terrible state of schizophrenia. And again, it is engineered, because that way it grants the that wickedness in high places, the Olympian gods of our society, to be able to hoard the sources, to be able to control the masses, and to really continue their great plan of eugenics and population destruction, the mind destruction of our population. So I think that's what's going on. And again, it's very sad that right now it's, again, everybody's lashing out, young people. We can say, well, we live in a great economy, but the reality is with the pharmaceuticals and all that, suicide rates are going up, depression is going up. It's bad out there. And again, we need to look inside. We need to look at our shadow. I know I'm repeating myself, but this is all going to be part of one of my introductions soon, Nate, and I hope it's making sense now.
Well, I mean, the message is clear, just to that one portion of what you just said. We absolutely, the solution is a spiritual solution, and whatever that means. I think if we're going to make that applicable to common people, it's cool we can talk about Gnostics and Gnosis and chaos magic with our people. I think that it's really important to find something that kind of sneaks into the cultural mindset and gets people to be interested in finding the truth behind the mystery the best they can. Just, you know, I mean, I think the initiation point of what you said is extremely important. You're speaking with two men who have gone through that. Brother Joe, what do you have to say to what Miguel just said and the general point, and, you know, about these shootings and all this malarkey?
Right. I'm still kind of taking in what Miguel said, but that is going to be something very difficult to do, to kind of bring how do you make this interesting? How do you make this more interesting than we are depressed? You know, like, we need to, like, tip that scale, like, jumping. I think either earlier today or yesterday, I was tweeting about how I stumbled into some of the, like, QAnon mysticism stuff, which I found to be really surprising, because I just didn't really know all that much about it. And what's mind-blowing is it kind of mimics, not mimics in a bad way, but, like, it's very similar to, like, what we're doing. But it has this very different flavor, you know, and I think it's representative of people want, like, knowing that something's missing.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, that's how it represents, like, what we're talking about, I feel like, is representative in these crazy things that we're seeing that I don't think we've ever seen on this scale before. That, cool. That addresses more, yeah. Like,
sorry, just to your point, I'll just quickly add that it's very, you know, I'm getting a Taoist sense of that for every action, there's an opposite reaction, or that there's a primal urge, a cry coming forward. There's something obvious of a need not being met. So please, I just wanted to add that that notion.
Yeah. Seeing that we, you know, like, in the more... conservative or right-leaning conspiracy world, we see that, like, that desire for, you know, that representation of Gnosticism as we would understand it. I'm wondering how does it go farther than that? You know, I don't know the answer to that. And I think that's what you asked. But I don't know. What do you, yeah.
Miguel, what do you think about this?
Well, this is a hard one because, let's put it this way, what did Philip K. Dick, the empire is the institutionalization and the codification of derangement. It imposes itself on others through violence. That's what the empire is. You can't argue that the United States isn't the latest incarnation of empire. Rome, the Ottoman Turk Empire, the German Empire, the British Empire. So we are it. And we are obviously, we have institutionalized and codified our derangement, and we express ourselves through violence. It seems to me the way the first thing to hit empire, so we can go back to, you might say, our libertarian or liberal ideals, is we have to hit the military-industrial complex. We have to stop the violence that we are imposing upon others. And that starts with the industrial-military complex. We are imposing countless numbers of deaths across the world. And if you don't think that affects our collective psyche, it has to affect our collective psyche. And of course, militarizing the police, all the surveillance programs and all that is creating, again, police state, for lack of better words. And that's messing up with our psyches. Nothing wrong with defending yourself and being armed, but we have become Philip K. Dick's empire, and it's getting more and more deranged.
I would certainly agree with the concept to tie what you just said, Miguel, with what we're saying about the spiritual solution. I think that what every single on that bucket, or not so much a bucket, maybe a slop bucket, but that laundry list of what you just mentioned was everything to do with having us cut off from caring about our own selves in groups and families and naturally formed tribes and societies, right? And that's always been the issue. That's always, you know, that's the great, you know, that's, you know, in consciousness, right? For say, you know, for materialists, the hard question is for how do you explain consciousness? For us, it's how do we liberate or come to what is the best picture look like? And that's what I think that, you know, if I could just give my best case scenario off the top of my head, it's one that's both incorporating a no BS new age approach that has something to do with libertarian values, but ultimately, see, I got off the thread. I swear to God right now, there's something interfering with my, it's not even
my parasites.
I can feel, no, I had something that I was trying to say entirely separate and it shifted. And I'm like, no. So I'm trying to balance my consciousness to come back to what I know I was authentically trying to say. But I think it was along the lines that got it. So it's basically like it can't be frilly or frou-frou. It has to be something people can understand, but understand why they're behaving in like the Wetiko manner. It has to be spoken to them in a manner that's just like, look, this is why this is happening. If you're looking for real solutions, I'm not going to tell you how to think, but you better damn well not dismiss this and make it a very plain, simple, you know what? This is the adult way to look at things. This is the responsible, and I say reasonable, way to look at things. So that's where I'm coming from in this. And it has to be sexy too. I'll just throw the cherry on top. You have to make change, which is what? Transformation, which is the sex and death, which is sexy. So you have to make change sexy. You have to put the medicine in the sugar. Anyways, that's what I got. So I hope that I think it's realistic, actually, is my whole point.
You could, I think so too.
You could do. I could see some like make change sexy hats being a thing.
Make change sexy again. All right, well, guys, that was it. We solved it. That was the end of the show.
Yeah, exactly. Tonight,
the Archons are defeated.
Utopia, go to makechangesexyagain.com.
guys, we're making, this is real change. No, I think that we take it so seriously, but at the same time, it's like, that's the void staring. We got to also just live and be mirthful and happy. We have to be caring. And that's part of that's for what end? For having an enjoyment of the life that is also hard.
Yeah. If I dare to tempt the Twitter gods and quote Robert Anton Wilson right now, and or paraphrase him, I guess, it's like, you have to have a sense of humor for all this. If you don't, this is absolute horror.
Agreed. Yeah,
you know,
Lovecraft lacked the sense of humor and had a weird affair. But up, up.
Yeah, I feel like if you can't at least laugh, it's everything becomes so heavy, you know, like.
Well, this is all, it's because it's also ludicrous at the end of the day. I mean, this is not just the way our government, our institutions work, but sometimes we look at how we treat other people. Sometimes I'm looking, let's say I'm fighting with my wife, or I'm getting an argument with a friend, or I'm losing it with the boss, and I go, this is completely illogical. Why am I doing this stupidity? Or I look at the way my an office is structured or something like that, and I go, you know, when I look at my kids and I think they're being illogical, they're not. They make more sense. Again, there is something completely ludicrous and pretty much insane about human society. And I'm not even going to get into the structure of the universe and nature, but it's ludicrous. It's makes no sense at the end of the day.
So do you think is there a chance that there is a divine plan, and that maybe the divine plan is to tell a giant story that leads to a joke?
I started a joke that started the whole world crying. Maybe on that one, when the Bee Gees had that very Gnostic song. But going back to Philip K. Dick, the creator of the world is deranged. He is empire. And I think this world is expressed how the demiurge really is. I think I know people go around, well, the Gnostics are so negative. And I always contend the Gnostics are the most positive of all movements in the world. But they do call it as it is. There is an unintelligent design of the universe, and as above, so below, and it spreads to our culture. Again, how we treat others from day to day, how so many people live with fear, how we hurt the ones we love. It's really something else. And yes, you kind of have to laugh. And if you look at the Gnostic texts, they are full of jokes and they are full of parody and puns and all that. And at the end of the day, as dark as they are, as 11, dialing up the notch 11 on the scale of, you know, Lovecraft darkness, there is a sense of joy and happiness there, because once you see, maybe not escape the wheel of karma, but you can see over the horizon, over the rainbow, you start getting giggly, because you say there is a way out, and the way out, and well, the way out, per the theme of this conversation tonight, I will quote Peter Gabriel in The Carpet Crawlers, you got to get in to get out, which is what we need to do as a culture, as a country.
I think a lot of people are so easily just swayed. You know, I mean, we've seen the rise with podcasts and, like, you know, keeping your mind busy and distracted. And it's an extension, I think, of where Netflix is dropping off. I don't know. I'm just adding that brief brain flarp. But the idea is the same as what you're saying. People need to be engaged in their existence. The three of us and everyone listening right now, this is a gift being given to you. I mean, illogical as it is and crazy and, you know, it's like a big circle with chaos inside. Yes, there's chaos, but it's contained. There's a logic to the chaos, even if to my brain, I can't comprehend it. The idea is that we can still, you know, it's going to suck at times, but there's also going to be good. And I think my willpower will be used to try to just, you know, make it so the most people can make it the most good. It's like a kind of utilitarian, but realistic too, you know. Joe, what do you think?
This reminds me, what we're going through right now reminds me of the lead up to 2012, but I can also see how it's just an extension of that, what was going on then. But I remember leading up to 2012, there was all sorts of crazy stuff in the news about people like getting caught naked. It just seemed like the world was kind of like melting down. Like it was like the Kony 2012 guy was found like naked in a park somewhere. And it just seemed like people were losing their minds. And this kind of feels like that again. Like there's this constant barrage of just uneasiness.
I have
just anxiety nonstop.
Yeah, remember that fall of 2012? We had Sandy Hook. We had Sandy the Storm. We had Mitt Romney going against Obama. It was, yeah, it was a bit batshit crazy then. But I think today is far, far. I mean, I think they've ramped it up.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd agree.
It's just like the level of kind of like the fever pitch.
Oh, good.
It's kind of like harmonizing back in time right now.
It's a good way to put it. I don't know, the word future shock comes to mind, but like the idea is that this 2012 or 2020 thing, I think it is coming around again. We're facing something very interesting coming up with the Jupiter Saturn alignment. And if you're following the Twin Peaks reality that we're in, then you're going to notice how they were talking about at Owl Cave, how when Jupiter and Saturn align, and those are, of course, the expanding and contracting forces, making things in the Doctor Who terms a bit wibbly-wobbly, timey-wimey. Let me get that right. Wibbly-wobbly, timey-wimey. And the 2020 period, I believe December, right around the winter solstice, is going to be when we're seeing Jupiter and Saturn align. Just like Twin Peaks comes back like 25 years later, I think that we're facing a similar strange, like in 2012, I don't know what the conjunction thing was, but right now we're actually facing some really weird stuff. And I think that's going to be a tumult period. And I don't Nostradamusize ever. It's not my bag. I just really, I feel like that's what we're talking about. I feel like that's a pinnacle time. That has to be a time. It's too great of a space weather event, either A, not to just do stuff on its own, B, not to have be seized by people who think it does stuff, or C, some combination of like the middle one and then other random stuff that just is, you know, makes it happen. I don't know. But yeah, what do you guys think about the upcoming 2020? It's going to be a weird celestial event. It's going to be obviously the president will be have sworn in, you know, during that period. So what do you guys think about that time period? Miguel, you go first if you like.
Oh man, I was thinking about the other day. I think it's a question of is there going to be another collective meltdown, collective trauma over something as really inconsequential as a presidential election? But again, that's the whole idea of keeping us in a state of stress. We have these perpetual elections. I mean, they already started. Why are people running? It's and it's leading up to some sort of big disappointment from some part of the population who's going to end up in a state of trauma and then the tension. So I'm definitely not looking forward to it.
So it's not Trump Towers, it's Trump trauma?
Yeah, exactly. One way or another. I mean, I don't think people understand, but as we talk, Trump is, he's the egregore. He's the fool card. He is the unconscious energy that is challenging the psyche of the country. He's not the savior and he's not the villain either. Again, he is, what did the comedian say in The Watchmen? What happened to the American dream? You're looking at it. And that's what Trump is. He is the egregore or the manifestation of the American dream as it happened in the late 20th and early 21st century.
Yeah.
So wrestling. An election or no election, that is not going to make the Trump aspect disappear. I mean, he can take his Twitter and whatever, 30 million fans, and he'll be Ben Kenobi, more powerful than ever. Yep. So again, I keep going, it's a psychic change and a spiritual change. So then 2020, that's the whole point, I think. It doesn't matter. I remember when 9/11 happened, I was going through a spiritual awakening, probably because I'd just gotten out of rehab. I was really happy to be alive. reading Eckhart Tolle and doing yoga and going to Buddhist temple.
Oh, wow.
I kind of missed the whole Bush, 2001, you know, all that stuff, because I was in such a centered place and my life was wonderful. And I'm like, I want to be in a place where all these external things just don't touch me except for being useful to the least of my brothers. So maybe that's what I need to gear myself. And I would highly advise everybody to do that.
I second that. Absolutely. Joe, what do you think about the same premise? There is the presidential election happening. I happen to think that Trump's just, you know, I'm of the camp that believes it's just going to be more wrestling. They let him live and now he's more valuable alive and yada, yada, whatever. And he's probably going to be there again because seems to be what's going to happen. I don't know, whatever. But
probably.
Right.
That's how it works. Everybody gets two shots.
Except for Bush. Bush 2, right? Or Bush 1, excuse me. Anyways, but the point isn't neither here nor there. What are you thinking about this 2020 conjunction? You definitely have something to say on the astrology aspect of it. What are you thinking about all of this?
Well, I think a lot of it depends on how much hype it gets, if it can break out of, like, Astro Twitter. If it can jump over into like the fringes that kind of like follow the weird internet, I think it could end up having a bigger effect. Like, not to say that it won't work on its own, and things might not be weird just with what's going on with the space weather, but if this breaks into more mainstream social media, I think it'll get hyped up and it'll be like another 2012.
Blood moon on steroids.
Yeah, like, you know, that'll be clickbait for everyone. So I could see it being like, and then like, what does that do to its actual power? It's like, now you're feeding, you know, everybody's feeding it. Oh, yeah. So I don't know. So it's probably inevitable, I guess. Shit's gonna be weird.
I think that maybe if I just make the right music, that I'll just infect the population's mind. I've gone into a Miguel and Joe, I've gone into this almost called it a coma, a cocoon. I guess it is it's a coma cocoon womb. Say that 5,000 times fast. I'm listening to six artists only, you know, it's six all around here. So, you know, Kate Bush, Farmer Con, Zola Jesus, Bjork, Liz Fraser, and Madonna. And I listened to the new Madonna album and then her back catalog, her first like six or seven albums. And now I'm starting to hear Madonna mentioned on things like No Agenda Show. So I feel like my little project might have some cool stuff going on here. And if I can turn myself into a powerful musician, then I can start, you know, getting those 2020 things into people's heads in a way that they don't even necessarily know that they know it. It's just an idea. Like, I'll put it out there, right? Just like that.
You're really channeling like the apocalyptic muse.
Yeah, and they're all female too, which is interesting. All good artists, don't mind you.
That's interesting.
It was a purposeful choice. You know, I come at my self-improvement and understanding of the world and my sacred practices from a few different backgrounds, and I meld them together, and what they make is whatever I'm directing them at my highest will, which I am an artist. It's crazy creation. And, you know, like Miguel said, reality doesn't always make sense, but at the core of it, there's something divine. And, you know, in whatever language or tempo or expressive matter and topic, if you can get that real core and focus it and make it, you know, profitable, dare I say, but what I'm saying is actually engineered so that it can impact them the way that you feel it, man, then that's your business. That's what I'm saying. That's what I'm doing. That's the form. That's the butterfly coming out the other end.
When you make things and it feels like something else is working through you, I think that is the most, that's definitely the most rewarding, regardless of what comes from it. So if that's what you're going for, I think that's a noble pursuit.
with the podcast, I just want enough from it so that I can sustain itself and make itself an entity, and then I can keep doing it reasonably. Same thing with my music, but I feel so passionately about what's coming through me. I need to focus it. Like, think about the prism or any kind of form of light. Right now, there's just so much light coming out of me. So what I'm trying to do is give myself the room. That's why it's a lot of female artists too. So I can really just give myself the room to see what these individuals who have, I feel, bared their souls in an effective manner. I'm learning. These are my senseis. I hope that's the long and short of it, eh?
You're looking for the goddess, or your anima is trying to connect with you, which is fine. And at the end of the day, sometimes it's like, they make me feel really good. I love how they make me feel. And there's nothing wrong with that. We've kind of gotten away from that cool 60s, 70s vibe. Like, yeah, this makes me feel good, and I'm just going to go with it. I don't have to be unconscious. I can be conscious of what's going on, but man, this stuff makes me feel good.
Yep. I'm picking up what you're putting down 1,000%. The groove, or the, yeah, exactly. Funk was, there's this whole myth around like P-Funk and such. Like, funk was the energy that started the universe, and it was, you know, that's kind of exactly what I'm saying in a way. I need to tap into the funk, brother. That's right. And that was the show, ladies and gentlemen. We tapped into the funk and everything was fixed.
I have nothing to add to that. You said it well.
I know. I didn't know how to follow.
It's like anticlimax is like, all right, another one. No, just good. And now a word from our sponsors. Hi, do you have enough Wetiko in your life? Well, try Grand Theft Auto 666. Guaranteed. You can shoot someone's head with a pillow.
Wetiko sounds like it could be a pharmaceutical.
I was just thinking that. At first I was like, what? Nate's been compromised. The pharmaceuticals are investing in this podcast. We're done. Wetiko.
What would Wetiko do? Why would you take Wetiko?
Miguel, you want to hit this one?
Yeah, that is a good question. Why do we allow these archons in our head, or these things to compromise? Obviously, again, I keep going to Philip K. Dick, we are sort of co-creating with these archons. We allow them into our lives. They seem to exploit something. I mean, we are humans. We are animals. We either want to go for the pleasure, or we want to avoid the pain. And these beings, obviously, I don't know if they twist it around or turn it around. And again, I'm talking about sort of the Wetiko. I'm talking about the mythology in which the archons feed off of our negative emotions, which I don't subscribe to that one. That seems to be the more popular one, the John Lamb Lash, Lawrence Galleon, and Jay Weidner kind of archon mythology. So I haven't really gone down that road. I mean, they obviously exploit some weakness, but I'm trying to figure what it is. Again, I don't subscribe to that particular mythology.
Run from those who have found it, cough. It sounds catchy. Hey, if you want to use that, you heard it on the Six of Cups, but that can totally be used some. I don't know, man. Just saying. While we're at it, let's start this thing called Gnosticism. I'm saying. So anyway, yeah. Joey, I feel like I really need you to say some stuff now, because I don't like that you've been quiet for too long.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's it. Okay, thank you. Anyways, moving. No. What you got?
Was there a question, or am I just kind of
Do your thing. Whatever's on your mind. It's a round table. We can kick it like that.
All right. What am I thinking about lately? I think, so I was talking about it when I was talking to you and Jerry the other day. I was talking about the Monroe Institute tapes, and I was talking about how it's been like probably one of the most profound experiences I've had in doing any type of meditation or magic work whatsoever. And it's really made me start to think about just sound in meditation and like the profound changes that it has. They do this hemi-sync thing where you basically hum like in your chest and you try to sync up with the frequency that's coming in your headphones. And you do it for probably like, I don't know, 5 to 10 minutes, and you just keep doing it. It's just like om, you know? And I've never been able to get into like that spiritual zone as fast as I can with that. And that alone has, I've just been thinking about sound a lot lately and how it seems to be like underemphasized a little bit.
Yeah. Cause like the archons and Wetiko can be calmed, but the proper vibrational intention. I think you said that for a reason. I'm telling you, there's something right there. That's what the reason the Caduceus rite has the balancing. I guess the Caduceus would be the one because you're balancing the two polarities. So if someone's like out of whack, someone with a really strong shamanistic, you know, loose term, or a Chinese medicine man, so on, so forth, could just be able to walk up to them and they could balance them. They could see the disturbance in their auric field and they could balance them. And that was one of the gifts. This is one of they call like a city. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Miguel. Oh, sorry. No, Joe, go. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Joe.
To kind of like tie all this together real quick, I'll wrap up. It's important for meditation. If you meditate or pray, you stop feeling crazy.
Yeah. It's huge.
Everyone feels crazy right now. You know, like it's one of the best antidepressants in the world.
Yes, I understand. TM's similar for me. Miguel, yeah. You mentioned that at the end of your last with Widener and the second guest right now.
But Lauren Scalion.
Yeah, in Mexico. Yeah, his voice. I love his voice is cute. I love his little. I wished him a happy birthday because of you, actually, by the way. He had to do this whole thing with the email and everything, but he's very nice. So the point is that, so meditation, it's a way of kind of being our own Asclepius rod or our own, Caduceus rod in a way. We're being vibrational mechanics in a sense of the soul. Miguel, what do you think about this stuff here?
Yeah, I would say so too. Definitely anything that makes us more conscious or allows for a clearer dialogue with the psyche. Allows us to take a bit of a inner contemplative journey of what's inside of us, hopefully even get beyond that world of symbols and archetypes if you're lucky. But my experience, it has to be the right kind, because I have tried different types of meditation and things get a lot worse than before they get better. And then you read some research that says people who meditate actually they go through the depression, they go through bouts of schizophrenia, and it makes sense because once you start either disengaging with the ego or the ego, if your ego is sort of warped, it will try to attack you because I don't want to be one of that school where the ego is all evil. I'm talking about an ego that's not developed or is under or not dealing with the shadow and all that. So. I have found I go through periods before I get better, horrible anxiety and depression. So it has, and it makes perfect sense. I mean, when you think about the Gnostic rites or the mystery religion rites, the first thing you're going to go through is you're going to go to Hades. You're going to go through death. In other words, the journey has to start with you facing the demons and the archons, whether they're metaphysical or in your subconscious. It doesn't matter. You have to face them. So there is that sort of purgatory state you have to go through. But this is where it's hard because I think this needs to be done with a master or a teacher. Like when I used to do the Santo Daime, the ayahuasca, it's pure hell the first hour. because you go down into every fear, every bad memory is suddenly magnified and thrown into you. You are down in Hades, like those ancients in the mystery schools. And it's, you need a guy. You need your own, like I said, Asclepius, or for Ewing, it was Simon Magus, to help you out with this. I remember one of the thing, one of the biggest mistakes I ever did. Have you heard of the Jesus Prayer in Greek Orthodoxy?
No, I don't think so, actually.
It's part of the, what do you call it, the Hayeskaska? I'm not pronouncing it right. But it's probably the most powerful prayer that you can do for a mystical state. And it's really simple. You just, you synchronize it to your heartbeat. He simply said, Jesus Christ, Son of God, forgive me, I'm a sinner. Huh. And you keep saying it over and over. The Greek Orthodox do it, the mystics. You say it over and over in sync with one of your heart, with your heartbeat. And a friend told me to do it, but he said, never do it alone or your ego will destroy you. You have to do it with a priest or a monk or a Greek Orthodox mystic.
Yeah.
So, of course, like an idiot, I didn't listen because I wanted the experience. I knew better. So I did it for a couple months every day. Jesus Christ, Son of God, have mercy on me. I'm a sinner. I think the old prayer in the medieval times used to be Jesus Christ, Son of God, have mercy on me. I want to experience, or I want to go inside. It was more mystical, but they sort of changed it. But I had the worst. After 2 months, I was having horrible panic attacks, anxiety attacks. I hit a horrible depression. And once I stopped the Jesus prayer, then I felt fine. And I was like, well, damn it, I should have listened to my friend. But it really does work. I mean, if you want something that's really going to get you in communion with higher powers, I highly suggest the Jesus prayer and the Greek Orthodoxy. But again, whether you're meditating or you're doing any sort of mystical thing, do it with somebody who can guide you, your own Philemon, a teacher, a shaman. I would say do it yourself. It sounds great, but not advisable.
Well, we're all interdependent. Like, you hear so often from other people that they look up to you, and it's the same way. You know, I think there's something not only about the fact that we look to those, if you're a seeker or whatever, you look to those who have dealt with their shadow in some way before. You could see manifold doors opening in that way itself. But the idea is that it extends itself further, that it gives a secretity to the notion, not so much of hierarchy, but of elders and of those who have come before. And it, in the same way as blessing our communities in that way, it extends itself to, if you can see and think this way, to treating our environment in a permaculture way, because we bless what we are grateful for, what came before, and we see what's necessary now and what's for the future. The shamans of now train us to purify our current souls so we can help those souls coming. There's a great chain that we are responsible, the three of us and others even hearing this now, all of us responsible for our roles in this great chain. Yes, it's also fun, and if you feel like it's not your business, then hey, it's not. But those who hear what I'm saying, there's some seriousness there. Some.
Yeah, we've just been talking about initiation and lack of initiation. That's why, yeah, without initiation, even if you take the mystical, esoteric path, you're going to end up, just as bad as those shooters and all these crazes that are out there.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it can break you. I mean, if we're talking about the real deal stuff, this isn't just sigils and, you know, whatever, which is a very good thing in general. It's just a tool. But we're talking about if you're actually going through the currents of your subconscious, dealing with who you are, with, you know, revealing using entheogens and other breathing techniques like holotropic breathing or hemisync, you know, with the whole toolbox, whatever you're using as an adult of your own free will and your own hopeful improvement. This whole idea is that we're cloying away at something that desperately wants things to go in one certain way, and we're still responsible. Even if it's hard, we're still responsible for these things. And that's one of the things that initiation does teach you. And that's what I think a couple of Six of Cups ago, we were talking about how when you were 14 or something, in certain traditions today, certain well-organized and well-together, how am I trying to say, certain community that stays together. They still have initiation. When their children turn 13, they have a certain ceremony, you know. So I'm saying certain lessons should be learned from certain successful groups in a certain kind of archetypal way, even if, you know, right now, Miguel, we're still at the level of archetypes, you know. But that's important, I think. You were correct. The roof of the world and beyond, my friend. But the idea is that this is actually still down here on Malkuth land, you know, level 1-1 of Mario here. We still need to do some good stuff, I think, maybe. And, you know, I think that the initiation is important. I think that young men and you know, women, but I can speak for myself as a man in this incarnation, in this meat suit of Nathan Lee Miller Foster. I'm knocking him out today. Joe's like, I don't need to talk. He's sucking up all the air. The point is, if you can't make fun of yourself, that's good ego, right? I think. So anyways, the point is that we can help each other. It's just, you know, I think that we need to look at certain lessons and take them seriously enough to realize that there's better things to do than being programmed by Netflix. Not to oversimplify, but to oversimplify. Joe, it's your turn.
I think initiation is something that's incredibly powerful, but you will never know unless you actually go through it. So how does that help? I'm not sure, but
that's extremely helpful.
I think it's, so I grew up playing sports, like team sports. And when I went through my, the Masonic initiations, that was probably the closest thing I'd felt to being part of, like basically playing team sports, playing with a team is very similar. It's not initiation, but it has that tribal, like primal feeling. And I think that's important for humans. And I think that that's why people probably join gangs and get involved with crazy militias and get co-opted constantly. It's because it's part of us. And it's something that we don't even know that we want. But yeah, it's pretty incredible. Like it teaches you about like with team sports, you learn about a cause greater than the self. You know, it's like a transcendent experience when you sacrifice something for others. And not that like initiation isn't necessarily that, but it's similar where it's like you have faith in something. And you kind of have to just lean into that and see what happens. I think it'd be good for people if we could somehow incorporate that back into the world.
I think it's happening. It's early in the game right now, but I think it's happening. I think that a deep need is felt. I think there are readily available solutions. And I'm glad that we have sites like Aeon Byte. I don't know if you've heard of it. You can actually search for your own and start to seek out groups of like-minded people that are looking for a greater thought. But at the same time, the communal aspects are also very important. And Miguel, when are you starting the temple again?
The temple?
I'm joking.
Oh, okay, good, yeah.
I have backers.
Where's my check?
Yes.
What's going on here?
We're surprising the Gnostics, it's a fundraiser.
Two anarchists. The Gnostics had little lodges. And even Manichaeanism had a lot of little satellites organized. But yeah, I don't think you could ever expect anything big. Although you can make an argument for, I guess the Samuel Weir churches, his organization in South America, which is huge, probably bigger than Scientology, actually has a lot of influence. But again, as soon as he passed away, then it split up into different, you know, the usual infighting, who's going to be the next guru, all that good stuff. But yeah, the Gnostics itself would be always going to be anarchist. It's the only way to do it. And I should, I guess on the initiation thing, I think you were talking about men and women. I think women, a part of initiation is understanding the horror of the universe and finding out what your role is in the tribe. Facing the horror and finding out your role in the tribe and where you stand in the universe exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
And I think women are closer to the source and understand the ideas of creation and destruction more than men. So we need more help. I mean, the only, like you think of Fight Club or The Matrix, these are really stories about male initiation. In fact, the author of Fight Club, that's what he said. He said, there's nothing out there anymore for men in our modern culture to be initiated. And both novels or both stories are about creation and destruction and facing the horror that is the universe, that is culture, and finding your place and just being a warrior about it.
Yeah. To the point about being a warrior about things too, I mean, there's a certain amount of, see, there's a difficulty in this. I support my country. I support my troops in general. You know, I support the rule of law, these general concepts. I like that there's order. I respect people who with honor fulfill these civic duties, right? Across, you know, from the state to the federal. At the same time, there's, hearkening back to what you said, even about the spiritual nature of this, the ultimate aspect of a free and liberated humanity would be one that is able to teach that free thinking, that individuality is the highest and best aspect. And the militant aspect of the Mars aspect of the humans would be aimed in a manner that's absorbed into the society, right? I'm not talking utopia. I'm just talking about like what would be functional, because that aspect's never going away. I mean, bread and circuses channel it only so much, right? In a broken society, I'm talking about like we'd need to find a way, but that would be how to do it. It would ultimately be a philosophy that teaches that every person, if they control their passions, if they're rational, and if they have empathy, that, you know, this world would be filled with mirrors of that copy. Be as such as you would wish to see in the world is basically what someone like Camus or Sartre would say, if you want to use that angle. But yeah, you know, it's kind of like being like Christ-like. But anyways, someone else's turn. I'm going to go with Joe.
I don't know. I don't know how we make this gap from like the hypothetical to the practical, because I think that just the average just being alive can be so just draining for people. You know, like that's why we come home and watch Netflix. That's, you know, that's why we just get takeout instead of cooking dinner. You know, you're just constantly trying to numb that. I don't know, like, is it longing? What it's like a persistent dull hum.
A lack of meaning.
Yeah,
they said that the rats in the cage would not go for the cocaine if they were in a natural setting. Initiation's natural. And I agree with Miguel on the, there is a difference between male and female. Otherwise, my body, your body, and your body wouldn't be here. And dear listener, same for you. The X crossed, you know, there is a cross formed, and your rose of a soul is born from that crossing of the rose. God bless us all for being even here to hear this right now. But the point is that the same thing. There's a polarity at play that was necessary to cause the paradox, to cause the entry portal for your soul to be born into the vessel in which it is now inhabiting. Therefore, there are males, there are females, and God bless everyone who does their own thing, right? You know what I mean? But there is a semen and egg thing going on too. And I think the female is, God, I'm not going to say superior, because that's not the word I'm trying to use. Although maybe I just got like a billion brownie points. I'm not really saying that at all. I agree. There's something mystical about the female, like the Venus, oh, not the Venus de Milo. What am I trying to say? The Venus, it's an archaeological, it's often used as a, like a vault that's slipping my, anyway. So, you know, just the woman, the empress energy. So yeah, I think men do need a structure. I think that it's a good thing for the boys to be able to play nicely is another point, because we're extremely powerful. We can crush heads and stuff like that. We need order.
I think that men also just need to start to understand women. Not to say that I do, but like, I remember a couple years ago, I realized that I only ever read men, like male writers. So I was like, I'm going to talk to my like women friends and ask them what, you know, I was like, what should I read? You know,
Jeanette Winterson.
Yeah.
I was, one of my majors was English. So I ended up getting exposed to a lot of writers. Jeanette Winterson has a book called Written on the Body. And it's got this one line that is absolute, the women writers, men, absolutely stuck in my head forever. And she said, stucco the, well, now I said stuck in my head forever. What is it? Stucco the porridge. Oh, Gavolt, the one word is slipping my head now that I've said that I can't get it out of it. Of course, now it's going to be like that. But anyway, so stucco the something with porridge. I can only, I can remember four of the five lines. And anyway, so very powerful stuff. Like the imagery in that book is very evocative, but I'm reading at the same time as Virginia Woolf. You know, I mean, oh gosh. Anyway, so yeah, I think women writers is the same reason that I'm doing the thing with the Kate Bush and the yada, yada, yada. Right. I think that's what you're talking about.
It is. Yeah. It's like, if you can't learn to like, I'm not trying to like get on a soapbox and be like a master feminist or something, but like it teaches you how other people think, you know, like that's why reading is so important, is you start to, you can like disassociate, you know, and if you only ever read, you know, it's like you're programming yourself with the fiction or anything that you read, but I think fiction's subtle. You don't realize what you're doing, you know? So,
well, Miguel could speak to Philip K. Dick, and I mean, that's the whole point about that kind of stuff.
Yeah, but remember, Phil, his whole life was losing his twin sister at birth, so that was this huge struggle in his fiction, was to unifying the male and the female, to find her. That's why he was so obsessed with the Roman Sibyl and Sophia and all that, the missing divine feminine of his life and of the universe itself. So it was, and it was torturous for him. I can't even imagine how it felt. But yeah, I'm trying to think of my authors when I was younger that I read. And yes, I was more of a fantasy, sci-fi kind of guy. So it was, you know, Tolkien, Michael Moorcock, Roger Zelazny, Arthur C. Clarke, all those good guys. But I also read a lot of female authors like Andrea Norton, Ursula Le Guin, Anne McCaffrey, and Rice, and they could be pretty visceral. I think that's why I like these novels too. I mean, if you ever read Flannery O'Connor, she can be more hardcore than Tarantino or anybody. Just an amazing head, and she's a Catholic. She's been accused as being Gnostic, but she would, like most Gnostics, including Philip K. Dick, they turn around and say, no, I'm Christian. They always keep it sort of secret within themselves until they give it away in some sort of diary or something like that. But yeah, a lot of good, definitely as much good female authors as there are male authors out there. And they bring as much to the table, and sometimes even more. I was always told as a writer, you can't write on a female perspective, but a female can write a male perspective. And even when I was in my 20s and Mr. Macho Man, I agreed with that. I don't know. It felt right. So it was.
Well, we're the ones missing the chromosome, right?
I think so.
Oh, boom. Nailed it. I think Joe's absolutely right about the female perspective. Again, by the way, I chose Madonna. It has to happen. So anyways, this is something that, you know, if we think about it from another pop culture perspective, I think that's what Tool was writing about when they had, you know, they were talking about the anima being used as an enema and wiping clean with the viscous fluid, just drainoing out all of that caked up, archonic, demiurgic, disgusting casting couch, exploitative culture that exists in Hollywood, yada, yada, LA, yada, yada, the record, yada, yada. So that's another way to look at it. If we can get in touch with our shadow, you mentioned Oswald on an opening, and you know, one of these days we're going to have to get Oswald on here, but he shared in the Six of Swords Discord a 46-2 video with a psychology buff talking about the transformative concepts behind such a video. And so throughout that same album on Anima, which is again a pun on Enema with the female spirit is mentioned Anima, what we're talking about is probably still just as relevant right now to a degree. I mean, there's a need for this and a need for that. Balance is good. Polarization balanced is good. But I think that the lessons are still readily necessary, especially in this like Quentin Tarantino Grand Theft Auto slash American ultra culture, you know. So I think that, you know, the men need to be strong and noble, but also be able to have a understanding of why the feminine is sacred, right? I think this is common understanding that it bears repeating now.
Wisdom of the ages, my friend. I think I am a bit out of the loop as somebody who's middle-aged and I've got 3 kids or a total of 5 kids and all that. I don't even pay attention. I hear millennials are not manly or they're too manly or what's going on. And I'm really glad to be out of that loop. So I'll let you guys be the experts on this.
We're barely millennials. We're what you would consider, just to that point. I don't even think too much about these my generation fake, you know, time. Well, anyways, the point is that Joe and I are both at the very tippity top of the millennial spectrum. If that's Joe, is that correct for you?
Yeah. We're like basically almost, we're like that bridge between Gen X and now.
Yeah.
Millennial.
Gen,
which is kind of tough, you know. That's kind of a rough deal.
Well, if it's Millennium and General X, then we're General Mills, right? Anyways, I'm sorry. I couldn't help it. I'm sorry, Joe. Please
continue. Drop that mic.
Drop that mic
right now.
Yeah.
This history's worst joke just got here. Don't worry about 2020. This is the apocalypse.
Oh my God! No, this is Armageddon, my friend. Apocalypses are for newbies. I come correct here. All right, so Joe, please. Now, Miguel and I are currently booking an act in Las Vegas, but please continue.
Where were we exactly? I'm gonna wrangle that back in.
You're talking about the millennial aspect of things.
In regards to,
Miguel said that he was glad that he's kind of
Okay.
I do know that the Gen Zs are going to be pretty hardcore. I can tell they have an edge. I can still tell with my little kids. Any sort of political correctness or anything like that, it is out the door. They have an edge. They have an edge. I mean, today my toddler, she's going to be 4 in August. She's playing some little online video game, and she's like, I don't like noobs. I block them. I'm like, my God, you guys aren't playing around.
She's got the ban hammer on her. She's got like a tattoo of the ban hammer at 18. That's it. Dude.
There, yeah. I mean, I don't know if you've seen that YouTuber called Soph, but she's like 14, and what comes out of her mouth is just intense filth. I feel like I'm back in my early 20s and listening to grunge, and it's very politically incorrect. It's offensive. It's in a way, it's refreshing, even if I don't agree with it.
Dude, I totally understand the bifurcated nature of that. I completely appreciate being able to see like it from two different angles in that way. Because, yeah, at the one time, it's good to see the intensity and the passion and the fury, even in a way, because it shows that there's a lot of potential if channeled. But at the same time, I mean, like, there's a lot of degradation going on and de-evolution. So, you know, where's it go? I don't know. It's up to that person, but that's...
big of a deal. I mean, my generation in the early 90s, we had to listen. We loved listening to Kurt Cobain, but we also loved listening to Michael Stipe, you know, the perennial, nice sort of liberal, politically correct. I mean, we appreciated both energies, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. I saw REM in concert with Modest Mouse a couple of years ago. Yeah. And I mean, if I'd be lying if I said anyone besides Kurt Cobain was really like, I don't know, my main influence. Yeah. Anyways. So I appreciate that. But yeah, I mean, like, it just sounds like if the 14-year-old kid's like cursing, yeah, this is all right. You know, eh. I don't know if we would have done that when we were kids. We probably would have got a few F words out and felt like we were kings of the world. I don't know.
World's a different place now, though.
That's what I'm saying.
I don't. Dealing with the anxiety and depression I've dealt with growing up, I can't imagine being a teenager right now.
Oh my God. Slaughterhouse.
Like, how do you even care about anything? You know?
Yeah. I understand. They thought like Nirvana kids were all like, yeah, whatever, man, you know, Shakedown 1979. Cool. You know, but like, it's really, you're right. Like, and like, they've got the advertisements programmed, you know I mean? Like look at the larger scope of what these kids' brains is. There's going to be likes is, you know I mean? What language will they understand? What will they know what poetry is? Will they be able to breathe on their own?
Just like, what do you focus on not to be just cripplingly depressed all the time, you know? Just the idea of climate change and the world changing and the coming water wars and things like that. Like,
hard times make for interesting opportunities.
That's definitely true. It's just, it feels like it'd be very easy to get lost.
Yeah. Story of my entire line of existence is, my friend. Miguel, what do you think about that, though? What's the antidote to that existentialist blues?
Oh, man. That's the story of my life, definitely. Again, it really comes down to meaning. What is your purpose? What did Mark Twain said? One of my favorite quotes, and it might be attributed because, again, in this day and age, it's hard. You got to follow these quotes. You never know, but it's a great quote. He says, the two most important days of your life are the day you were born and the day you find out why.
Yep.
And that's the quest of who you are and what is your sacred quest, if you would. That's what matters. And so it doesn't matter what you're doing, whether the world is ending, today's the greatest day of your life. If you have that know thyself prophecy that you find, the Temple of Delphi, know thyself is what Apollo said. Once you can get there, then everything starts. Then you can start categorizing and finding out your other priorities. So it's different for everybody. But at the end of the day, I would say, knowing yourself is the ultimate mystical experience, because that's what the whole universe, the whole culture is trying to tell you who you are and who you shouldn't be. So the quest is still the same, whether it was 2,000 years ago, 1,000 years ago, or teenagers today on their social media. And that's a hard one, because I have a daughter who's 21, and she struggles with that. Should I be an actress? Should I go into management? Should I have a relationship? What is my spiritual path? It's not easy. So, but it's a great journey down into the labyrinth of the self.
I think that also knowing yourself allows you to be more still and present and in the moment. I think there's a connection between that conquering the noise process and the external influences process, and also just being very in the moment and very able to more richly appreciate the gift of life.
Gratitude goes a long way. That is for
God.
Sure.
Yeah.
You have to be grateful because you are alive. You are this little droplet of consciousness that has an identity. This droplet of consciousness that you are will never exist. No God will be able to recreate it. The Tyrell Corporation won't recreate it. It's as unique, as important as Socrates. It holds up really the universe because it is unique. So,
dude,
appreciate this little droplet of consciousness, this little subjectivity that you are, because it is an incredible miracle that will never happen again, and find out why it's here.
That's so beautiful. That's exactly what I was, I mean, I couldn't even say it. Like, honestly, Joe, you're up. I just want to say that I was literally thinking about that there, as is such the case when we speak and how we work in general these days, it seems really. But in general, I was thinking about the same thing earlier, the very same thing about the uniqueness and the mattering of that, the sacredity, the holiness of that gift. Joe?
The first time I think I ever really experienced that feeling was when I first started practicing magic. And not to get like inside baseball too much, but so like my first experience with magic was like more involved magic was kind of like following the Golden Dawn path. And a lot of those exercises really, like the early beginner level exercises really kind of like the world had never slowed down for me before like that. And, you know, and you start to kind of get out of your own body and you know, I had a lot of like death experiences, you know, and like learning to let go and to feel the, like that connection. And kind of tying back into what we were talking about earlier about needing, how desirable it is to have someone kind of like guide you through this, you know, like a mentor or a teacher, you know, in a lot of magic books you read, they'll talk about how, you know, be careful doing this stuff because you might go crazy. You know, going back to what Miguel said, you know, it's like you confront the depression, you confront your monsters and demons. But it's kind of like all part of that, you know? Like if you've fallen down this path, you may as well learn the tools or else it's just going to be even more miserable. You know, like mysticism, magic, meditation isn't for everybody. But it certainly helps. And I think it can kind of bring you into communion.
Well, I think meditation can be for everyone. You know what I mean?
Yeah, probably. But it still can, you know, if you're not ready to have things get crazy, or if you don't have like a safety net, it can be kind of scary, you know? What is it? Cho Young Trumpa says, like, if you haven't started down this path, don't. That's paraphrased, but like basically if you're going to start to do this kind of stuff, it's going to be miserable. But with that, you know, you get the glory too.
That's the whole thing. Like life is, we're here once. Like, okay. So Helen Keller had it really hard. Right. And if Helen Keller is going to say something, you better damn well listen to what she has to say when it comes to saying something like, life is either a daring adventure or nothing. Security is mostly a superstition. It does not exist in nature. You know, I mean, like, dude, it's true. We live in such a factory-fed framework for our entire waking consciousness, the three of us. There's been a huge new world since after the Second World War that the three of us, more or less, we can ignore the computer aspect. It's been like television shows, advertising. That's been Edward T. Bernays'd. So we got the whole nine. The three of us know that we have been so full of a particular type of consciousness, how you say, consensus, that it's almost impossible for us to really grasp outside of a particular limited range of set possible attainable consciousness states within this incarnation. I'm posing a question. Is that possible?
I like pie. Just kidding.
Oh, banana!
Yeah, no, man. When you get going, it's like poetry in motion. I am quoting a song.
That would be Song of Solomon.
No, that's She Blinded Me with Science.
Oh, the poetry in motion was used by Kate Bush as well.
Oh, was it? Well, it's probably older than that. But when you get going, Nate, it is. Sometimes I get lost in it. I'm like, okay, this is awesome. I love the vibe. I like where this is going. I guess all I have to add to this is also those looking for meditation, I would suggest, remember, there are many types of meditation. We have this romanticized view of the guy sitting still, but that is so wrong. Yep. Western culture is rich with meditation and Christian, Jewish, and Muslim traditions. There are modern types, if that's maybe what you need. Even in the Easter, you got TM and a whole slew of meditations. But I think people forget that hypnotism, NLP, stuff like that, these are forms of meditation too, and they work better. For example, I tried hypnotism and NLP, and it worked better for me simply because of my, I come from a different mythology, and my brain is wired differently, and I had better effects than the usual 10 minutes a day or half an hour a day sitting still. So it depends. Test the waters and
that's a
find out what works for you.
Yeah, the cultural aspect too. I mean, I think that we are so bereft of understanding like Chinese medicine and Qigong and energy matrices and how they connect to the stars. I'm serious. Like that's such an important aspect that I think we need to bring in to really grasp what's going on.
Another thing is, of course we romanticize the East. And if you guys noticed, but when you look at the East, they sort of romanticize the West. When you watch anime, have you noticed that Christianity is this sort of Manichaean? It's either pure, perfect evil or pure, perfect good and mystical. That's how the Japanese seem to see Christianity, at least in modern times, or at least that's how it manifests in anime. Sometimes it's never the boring sort of Protestant going to church kind of secular kind of Christianity.
It's such mystical. It's such a synchronicity that you mentioned that, Miguel, my father's a pastor. And he, I was just talking today, had to pick up some cannabis. I was just talking today about how my father was a pastor in Japan for like 3-something years.
Oh, wow.
He taught English and was a Christian missionary.
What denomination?
As far as, I got his business card right over here. I think it's,
I always pegged you as a fish eater like me.
You think I'm Catholic?
Well, you're in Boston.
That's fair.
See, there I go. I'm romanticizing this area.
That's fair. I feel like I had a point I wanted to make to something that you said earlier, but that's all right. Yeah, so it's a Lutheran church, it says then. I was raised Methodist, but Lutheran is what that what he's doing now, it seems.
Well, that's where I live right now, I am surrounded by Lutheran churches, and they're all very progressive. That's where they hold AA meetings. They have rainbow flags. I mean, they're really marketing to the millennials. Let's put it that way.
Do you think that there's a Joe? I know we're just going. It's. I just want to ask Miguel. Do you think that is AA getting a lot of millennials in nowadays compared to, is it the same influx socially approximately percentage wise, or numbers going down, numbers going up? What you hit upon a point there. I was just wondering.
Good question. I'll have to ask. I mean, obviously I see, especially when I was living in the city in Chicago, definitely huge amounts of millennials, especially outside of downtown and so forth. Places like Lincoln Park, Wicker Park, obviously downtown was older, a lot of the older executives and lawyers. And now that I've moved outside to the country near Wisconsin, obviously it's older. But yeah, I would say it's still... the numbers are there. The demographics are there. I mean, like they say, alcoholism is alcoholism. There's no, it doesn't, it's not going to skip a generation like social media or movies or books. It's,
exactly.
There's always going to be addicts. There's always going to be available drugs. Personally, I don't think drugs are positive, but of course I believe legalize them all. It's our right to take them if we choose to take them, and it's our lives.
I think that there would be potentially, and Joe, hit it up after this, because I think this is, I myself have struggled with reasonable, at times, temperance in my imbibement, eh? How put it like that? So sometimes drinking was not a good thing for me, is what I'm saying. And I think that in a culture, if we had more of a raised up with it, like, okay, we drink it at breakfast a little bit, or something like a German thing or a traditional way of having it introduced to the culture appropriately, instead of 21 getting there or getting all messed up before that, but 21 getting there. Oh yeah. Way too old for this to be actually culturally relevant and useful. So what I'm saying is that, do you think that we actually, Joe, I'm going to throw this to you. What do you think about it, having it be more culturally assimilated, And for those who shouldn't be drinking, we don't do that, and or they don't do that, or whoever doesn't do that. But for the general mainstream, you get what I'm saying. Do you think that? What are your views on this? And should we change it, and how? Go ahead.
Yeah, I definitely think we should change it. I think that there's definitely biological impairment from drinking at a young age, like a developing brain. Same for cannabis use. Not to say that I didn't do both when my brain was developing, but I think that the problem comes, the problem is magnified by the taboo. So if you're sneaking it when you're younger, then it's taboo, definitely. And then even if you waited till you were of legal drinking age, it still has kind of like this mystery to it, you know, all substance, whether it's alcohol or drugs, or, I mean, not that there's a difference, but you know what I mean? Legal, illegal, whatever, you know, if I think, yeah, we need to stop treating it like it's like this, I don't know, like a sin, you know, we can't treat this stuff like it's something we can't talk about. You know, it's like how many family members were lost because, you know, they had a problem that no one could, you know, deal with, no one to talk about, you know, so yeah. They get ostracized. And then, you know,
my uncle Maddie died in a, like, yeah, no, I, yeah, I am another podcaster who has an uncle whose death was under shitty circumstances due to, so yeah.
There's gotta be a change. And I mean, cult, yeah. Like, I mean, we have a problem even acknowledging our own ethnic cultures, whether it's Polish, German. I think, you know, a lot of like quote unquote white people have lost their culture because their culture just became America. It's not, you know, no one remembers like what their great, great, great grandparents did, you know, like, and if we did honor that, yeah, I think that probably would help with at least the socially acceptable drugs.
I think so.
But yeah, I mean, legalize them all.
Well, the honor for the culture is honor for a way that had these kind of things in them before it got commodified and somehow mechanized through an industrialized civilization of empiricism. But all I'm saying is that basically reverence for the old ways can be like mixed with the new. There's always good, you know, I mean, the true alchemist, the true, and I mean, I'm just talking for the people who are in our, you know, we speak this way. For the true alchemist, everything's useful if you can actually, you know, hit it with the right angle of light or the alchemical temperature, or maybe combine it with the right thing at the right time. Everything's useful if you have the right eye for it and attitude, and, you know, you've got to know what to discard, too. That's the greatest thing. Kill your darlings. Everything's an opportunity, but you don't have to take it, you know? And sometimes an important factor I want to add is that higher impulse. We got to give some shout-out and love to the Holy Spirit's, the ancestral spirits, the built-up philosophical spirits, the egregorical spirits, all of these different influences impacting our lives, astrological as well, that we don't pay heed to as much as we could if we're especially trying to get a culture to, you know, be more tolerant of the approaches to changing of consciousness using external things. We should also provide a sexy alternative in the form of something that was kind of used to be taboo, but I think we're going to say is now more mainstream than ever, and people are going to start to see it as accepted as what was materialism.
Well said, indeed. And I, of course, I should mention, again, this goes back to initiation, ritual, making everything in life a ritual. That includes drinking, doing drugs, anything else. So then it doesn't, as you said, then it becomes integrated in who you are. And Joe hit it on the head about stigma. The example I want to use, and of course, this goes to what Nate was saying about alchemy, the old and the new. My homeland, Portugal, is the perfect case study. Huge heroin problems, out of control. So what did they do? What did this Catholic country do? They legalized all drugs. And what happened is law enforcement money got funneled into therapy. And without the stigma of heroin, suddenly A, young kids weren't attracted to it. And B, those who might have some problems doing heroin would get help and bring it out all in the open. Like the Gospel of Thomas says, if you bring out what is within you, it will save you. And drug addiction basically went to nothing in Portugal. And people might say, well, this is just one culture. It worked in this Mediterranean socialistic culture. Well, guess what? Norway tried exactly the same yep. model. Drug addiction went to nothing. So
social choice.
Yes. So if we want to solve the pharmaceutical drug problem in the United States, which is just growing, killing young people, destroying lives right now, I think the only way is to go libertarian and anarchist. It's really the or social anarchist, where we give people, we invest the money into law enforcement and to be able to get therapy and rehab and just get the stigma out and get them some help.
I think we could still do that in a republic, of course, to be honest. I mean, that would be a will of the people thing. I mean, it's, but to your point about that whole, like, if you don't bring out what's within you, it becomes like, to put it in a mundane way, it becomes like a neurosis or a self-fulfilling negative cycle, right? That's the whole, like, you're not, you, like, anyone's not using their creative spark. I don't know. I felt inspired to say that, but like overall, Joe, what could we, as like practical workers of the consciousness realm and builders of a freer, better, more reasonable world, what could we say is a takeaway for getting, like, what could we just kind of like talk with about, like, to the normies in our lives to kind of spread the idea, like, say, don't you think this would be better if we, like, how would you make this, both, let's just start with the substance of beer or something like cannabis. I mean, how would you feel that as a responsible, how would you put that as an adult conversation and something that would be effective practically?
I feel like that's obviously got multiple facets, to, you know, like your peer group, or even like your elders who might have a problem with it. Is that, am I on the right page here?
Yeah, keep going with it. It sounds good.
Okay. I think you'd have to just kind of, I guess I would appeal to their own memories and with their own experiences with whatever the substance in question was, you know? And then, you know, it's like, you'd have to walk that fine line of like not being like the cool mom from Mean Girls, you know, where it's like, you guys can just party at my house because at least I know where you're at, because I don't think that teaches the responsibility aspect of it, you know. But it's something along those lines where, you know, like, you'd almost have to start to, you'd have to know more about your own culture to kind of try to rationalize it, or maybe approach it from an angle of teaching, you know. It's like, I wish that my parents would have taught me a little bit more about alcohol before I went away to college and just threw my life away drinking for many years.
Yeah, because we're framing it too, like the parents have that much time in the day to talk to their kids, right, and have that impact on them. I mean, like, we're making a gross assumption that there is that connection at all too.
Yeah.
I mean, you were right. There's multiple levels to this.
I think maybe just like trying to, I don't even know. I think all you could do is, if you have children, try to teach them as much as you can. I mean, I think Miguel would probably have a better point of view on this from that angle. But
the only one of the three of us.
Not being judgmental, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, I think at the end of the day, you really have to walk the walk, at least. And of course, there's never any guarantees because this is a huge mystery. I mean, my parents self-medicated with alcohol. My dad was an alcoholic. My mom was bipolar. So of course, it's something that I learned. But at the same time, I think my other kids, older kids, are 27 and 21. They basically saw me sober up. They saw me go into recovery and embrace the spiritual life. So they saw the dark and the light. They saw what I could teach them. They saw how I walked the walk. And now neither one of them drinks or does drugs. I mean, they tried it, but they pretty much, it's not an issue. So in that way, I would say, yeah, walk the walk, but don't expect them to walk your path, because they're going to walk their own path.
You got lucky there. That's a blessing. That's a mitzvah, as they say. Yeah.
Yeah. So far, so good. Because we know this disease is definitely genetical. The darkness, the sins of the father sometimes get passed down. I mean, even with my three little ones, I kind of know which one has it. I can tell by the shadow that follows one of my children. And it's not easy, but I just have to be there for them.
Well, I mean, if anything, at least you have the awareness because you went through it. So while you wish as a parent you could protect it from any pain, I'm sure, I'm like not a parent, but I'm pretty damn sure that's a sensation I can imagine having. Yet you know that they are going to have to. That is tough. I don't mean to make little of anything, but it's a pickle and it really is tough.
Yeah. Well, I always like to think of Khalil Gibran in his book, The Prophet. He talks about children, that we are simply the bow that shoots the arrow, but that arrow is going to go where it may. And I have to keep reminding myself, and I have to remind that I was an arrow shot there. I held on to a lot of resentment to my parents for years in my 20s, and it was just silly. I was just wasting my time because this is my life, and this is my destiny, as they say. But easier said than done. I mean, there's a lot of programming. There's a lot of deprogramming that has to go on, and we never fully get out of it. We simply have to recognize these patterns.
Well, to your point, then I'll toss it to Joe. I mean, a large part of why there's even bad in the world is so that good can have meaning. And our same thing with our, I mean, this is at least how I can understand the reality. The same thing with the evolution of my spirit. It's being tempered by the fires of this reality, if you will. And I speak for all of us when I say that is the human condition. That is the condition of the consciousness in any sort of striving towards perfection or communion with the highest possible. And you can, you know, I utilize, like I said, all sorts of different methods to get there, but the highest goal is still the Tao, or, you know, the grand architect of the universe, or being, in my case, as an artist, possessed by source and higher funnels to that. So, I mean, I think, Joe, you would say that ultimately we're all really working on ourselves and trying to make our arrow shine bright as we go, and we can help each other do that. And that makes us shine more because we're sharing light. I don't know. Am I feeding the question here? What are your thoughts on all of this?
I think that telling the truth and being like speaking truthful is probably like the one thing that we can do. You know, whether it's, you know, you can do it with tact. You know, you don't need to be a jerk about everything, but just like, if there's a conversation, you know, it's like giving your, I mean, it's definitely a learned skill to be able to present the way you feel about something. But I feel like it's important to do, whether it's you're talking to younger people about, you know, it's like sharing your experiences, you know, like telling people whether it could be anything, just, you know, arguing with someone about like, having military bases all over the world, or whether or not that cannabis should be legal. You know, like when you speak from your own experience and you're telling your truth, I think it's really important. And I think that kind of, it shares that experience with someone else. And I think that can be powerful because I don't think a lot of people do.
Well, there's a soundness. There's a clarity in the authenticity of the sound, quote unquote, of the person coming at you with their experience. And we're assuming they're just like coming at you on the level, you know, this isn't like some psychopath trying to fake you out or anything. Some people can do that weird thing where they can seem unique, but the real uniqueness, it has a genuine quality of sound to it. It's got a integrity to it. So that's what you're saying about the experience that they bring to it from their own life. It's got an integrity to it, and that's why there's something profound and, I would say, necessary about what you're saying, Joe.
it by trying to tell the truth and tell your own experiences, you know, it's like, if you want to convince someone that marijuana should be legal, how are you going to do that? If you're a user or a fan of cannabis, if you can lead by example and not be a stereotypical, like, couch lock stoner, you know, that's important. That's important for people to see, because it starts to change the public perspective, like, perception of a stereotype, you know, and that can go, you know, to anything, you know, whether it's, I don't know. But yeah.
Miguel and Joe, if you don't mind my interjecting, I would just like to say, synchronistically enough, I know it's the first time I've ever said that before, but synchronistically enough, tonight I'm at the Canny. I call it the Canny. You call it the package store's the Packy, the cannabis store, you know, the Canny. And I'm talking, there's me and the attendant there. She's very nice. We're talking, you know, just blah, 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 blah. And I'm saying the exact same thing. As we're parting, the last little bit of our conversation, I'm saying exactly what you're saying, Joe. I'm saying that we need to make sure that as these people who are obviously, you know, aware and adults and enjoy cannabis and recognize how it helps us, at the same time say that you cannot let the culture, I'm saying to her what you're saying, we have a responsibility to perpetuate the culture that it's a plant that is another tool in your assembly belt or whatever to help you achieve your dreams. It is not something to help you escape reality. That is the Occam's razor. If you're not using it for productive purposes, check yourself. It's not my business to tell you what to do, but that's what we were basically saying the same thing you were saying. It needs to be perpetuated that it's something that's useful and good as it is. And we need to, obviously, Miguel's like, right, we have to walk the walk.
I like what you said. Yeah, it's not to escape reality. You have to improve it. And at the end of the day, just more than anything, know yourself, but be honest with yourself what exactly it's doing to you, where you're going with it. Don't worry about societal pressure.
Yeah, well, your peer group, too.
Exactly. Yeah. That's a big one, too, especially when you're young. We are monkeys that need to imitate, and we do it. I mean, even you were talking about the human brain, or Joe was. I just read that the human brain doesn't really settle or become fully, not actualized form till you're 27.
So, oh, they're saying 27 now?
Right.
But a couple of years ago when I was in some, you can't see it on the podcast, people, but when I was in some neuroscience courses, because that was one of my minors, they were saying it was 24, 25.
It's not fully formed, but so, yeah, putting this stuff into your brain.
It was at this point when Miguel was suddenly vanished away. It turns out that snark was a boojum, but if you listen to the show up to this point, you know exactly what I'm talking about. So, gonna say that this is the part of the show for those who like the Six of Cups. You can donate. You let me know that you're donating in honor of the Six of Cups and say, I'm donating just for the Six of Cups, or in honor of this show, or that's, you know, this, that, the other thing. And you can donate. And thank you, as always, to those who do. And you'll get your name and message read, and you'll get cred, and eventually it will build up. And we've got plans for that. So we've got some people already underway on that. For the special that I'm talking about, any show counts, any of the four shows. Anyways, I think I've said so much that I've said enough for now. So with that, back into the show. This is, of course, the part where those who are above 50 and under 200 will get their names and such read. So I hope you're liking this. It's Brother Joe and I from here on out. So thank you so much for listening.
That was fun talking to Miguel. I was a little starstruck for a second.
Oh yeah?
Yeah. I mean,
you did great.
It's just funny. Like when you talk to someone you've only listened to forever.
Well, before we get started again, that's kind of like one of the reasons I wanted to bring you on here. I thought it'd be kind of like a cool, like, I don't know. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I know. I appreciate it. It's really fun.
I just, you're, yeah, dude, you're, You're my dude. You're my brother.
Yeah, we have this at the company I work for. We have this saying that's really kind of like cool lady, but like part of the like one of our mission client statements or whatever is we rise by lifting others. And it's like it's really culty, but when you think about it, it makes a lot of sense. You know, like if you're doing things with people, like
it makes sense.
You succeed through other people's success. You know, you don't succeed being surrounded by people that lose.
Both of those things are right. You got to surround yourself with people who you also feel are going to be doing things that are important. Yeah.
Yeah. No, it's the whole thing, like aligning yourself with like a mission and like doing a thing.
I'll tell you,
man. It all kind of like comes together.
So yeah, let's just get back into the conversation. Let's so 3, 2, 1, and yeah, the whole idea of being able to lift other people up by, you know, giving them your honest and you said like truth, like I think there's something very important about like just like having for the most of us, for the people who are listening to this, for the people who are gonna like, you know, we're trying to do something good or, you know, at least like are mildly interested, whatever. Like for those people, like it really behooves us to come from a place that is trying to deal earnestly, deal plainly, deal. Do you know what I mean? Like that's so important for us to actually like, I'm thrusting forward, like magnetically pulse that out into the world.
Yeah, it's your hermit's lamp lighting the way.
Exactly. It's like your aura. Like that's like your ability to like how wide can you spiral out? You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's like the idea of like the bodhisattva.
How so?
Maybe I'm using the wrong term. You keep reincarnating to help bring everyone to nirvana?
Oh, sure. Yeah. That's a bodhisattva. They forsake the rejoinder with the great infinite cosmic lotus of all consciousness in order to forswear it until the last lowest conscious being has attained Buddhahood.
Right.
That's some badass spiritual warriorhood.
Yeah, and I'm not trying to claim that that's myself, you know. Like, I'm not like an egotistical sort of way. But it is kind of like a fun archetype to play around with as long as you don't get all guru-y about it, you know?
You ready for this one? How about like, Judah Zerman, won't you take me by the hand?
Yeah, I mean, if you probably shouldn't trust anyone who's telling you that they're going to teach you to be enlightened.
Well, my go who is just here says, run from those who have found the truth, right?
And if you found the truth, you're probably not.
You're sitting on some laurels that are delusional, already right. Wilting. Your rose is already wilted.
That is true.
The Tao is never still, my friend.
No, I feel like that kind of ties back into, you know, like how do we, like what we were talking about earlier in the kind of like the first half-ish. About like your role, like how do we kind of like change the dialogue or influence the dialogue? Like how do we bring this to culture? And I feel almost preposterous saying it, but feels almost like a delusion of grandeur, but
together.
I guess that's kind of the point of magic. And being a bodhisattva, I guess. But it's kind of like the archetype of every, like, in all of, like, the rescue, not rescue stories, but after the end of the world.
Yeah.
You know, the wise people come back and teach, you know, bring the forgotten knowledge. It kind of, like, ties into the whole bodhisattva thing on a different level.
All right, I'm glad that we're talking about this right now. Yeah, like it makes me think of like how we should be more like invisibles. Like that's our role, is to like develop our powers and use them for, and I mean, like it's like the idea with it. We come back to the first episode that you and I did on Six of Swords, a different podcast,
totally different,
that that was talking about how there's so many different plans. Like, you know, it's, even though we're all trying to work towards the good, some of us are working towards a different good, but there's an overarching just good that good dudes and dudettes and all types in between recognize as legitimately just, you know, trying to be cool. And you do end up fighting for the same end ultimately. It's kind of like the Game of Thrones, where, spoiler alert, they're just trying to fight the Night King. You know, it's kind of like a similar idea. In the end, we're fighting that chaos. In a sense, I guess is an awkward word for a chaos magician to use for it. But if any people could, we could. So yes, there it is.
This conversation reminds me of, I was looking over some notes from when I was doing the some of the ancestor work from like the RuneSuit Premium members.
Sure.
And I remember on my first kind of like heavy encounter, It's like writing down something from a dream, and it just feels absurd to actually say out loud, but like ancestral advice that was given to me was do good and use magic for liberation.
Nice.
And reading that, it's one of those things. It's like, yeah, of course, that's obvious, but it also has kind of like a intensity to it.
Yep. It points you in the, you know the direction you're going in.
And I think that like magic is a form of liberation. You know, it's like the truest, you know, it's like rewriting your own narrative, like paying attention to the rules and being like, if you can make the rules.
Without a doubt.
Yeah. Why can't I?
Like one of the reasons that Gordon likes Bruno is because Bruno was like, F you, my universe contains yours and every other, it's vaster than you can even conceive. And that's the same thing. It's like, this is my consciousness too. I am part of the same creation you are. I am equal as any perceived hierarchy, up or down or inside or out or left, right, this way, or hey, let's invent some fourth dimension terms. But the point is on all as above, so below, my consciousness is a divine spark as well, and I claim my sovereignty. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, if you were like just taking like a Christian like slant to this, like not to call out all Christians, but like if you were, I feel like if you were experimenting with like the true idea of Christianity, you'd have to accept the fact that you, if God is part of you, then you are part of God, and that means that you are God, and if you are God, that makes magic make sense, but it also kind of like blends that like responsibility and trying to do good, you know, and like what you said, like Christ consciousness.
What kind of God like, are you? Yeah. Or what kind of, how are you going to wield the divine architect's, you know, moldable, pliable intentionality with your free will?
Right.
In the time allotted us here.
I don't think I could say it better than that. It's like it kind of reminds me of how people get all hung up on like the do what thou wilt thing with Thelema and how they think that means that it gives you carte blanche to do whatever you want. I mean, and it's like, no, if you have the powers of God inside you, you must act responsibly as a God. And that's what it is. And you have to kind of like take up that responsibility.
You find a lot of so-called Thelemites who are also extremely just like aware of that entire mechanism, right? And I mean, like, I think that hopefully from my experience and at least people in my life that I allow in my life, in my circle, in my entire magical universe, is that people who recognize that it's not carte blanche for you to be an infantile, undeveloped, selfish, little, measly, meager, and negatively, invertedly modest erasability, to put it so, It's just a matter of that people who aren't ultimately serving the good are recycled.
Well, it's like you're basically just like being a Christian who doesn't actually practice.
Oh, God.
If you're a Thelemite that thinks you can do whatever you want, you're kind of missing the point.
You ever think about how people like blame the Jews or the Freemasons or like this or the other thing? It's just like, but like all throughout history, like all cultures do these things that are really crappy. Why don't you focus on yourself? Look at what your station in life is. Do what you will, if you will, but make sure that what you're doing is improving yourself and people around you. I mean, I know it's a crazy idea.
Yeah, I think it's kind of like that reptile brain, you know? It's like the animal that's still in us that we have to kind of learn to transcend or turn down a little bit or absolutely channel into more positive.
Absolutely. Avenues. The last one, channeling it, because it's there, and it's just the same thing with the shadow. We need to be able to expand the shadow to the... I think that in that 46 and 2 video, there was something about expanding the shadow so that it touches the ego in a Venn diagram so that you're super balanced. It's some crazy thing like that. And I'm like, all right, well, there's something to learn about there because there's, you know, if that's not exactly the mechanism at play, there's something conceptually, tangibly tasty there. I'm picking up what he's putting down. So consciousness evolution is a weird term because I don't know, you know, I don't even know how much I get down with like any set theory. If you feel what I'm saying about evolution, wink, wink, nudge, nudge, fishy, fishy bumper sticker, all I'm saying is that like, I think that, you know, while everything is open to being questioned, damn right, that I think that like when we call consciousness evolution or expansion or some, you know, the words kind of fail us, but what we're trying to say is just like respect for other life and like just appreciation for the beauty that it can represent, especially when it's being the most it naturally, as long as that's, you know, somehow pleasurable. I don't know. It's all sorts of stuff there. Not everything's good, but as far as our own control of our own conduct and what we bring to the table, yeah, that's valid.
Going back to the consciousness evolution thread, that, and then segueing back into what I said about 2012 earlier in the show, it seems like we're at a point where people's brains start to break. Like, you can either learn to juggle all of these different, like, worldviews or reality tunnels, as they're known.
Sure.
And if you can't do that, and I think having a sense of humor, yep, helped, you start to lose it. You know, it's like these people's reality has just been shattered, or they're living in some like nonstop horror state. You know,
in Taoism, they talk about the reed that is inflexible will break when the strong wind blows. The supple reed will survive any gale.
Yeah.
The supple reed is soft.
I think we definitely need a lot more of that as a culture right now.
There's something interesting about like the, I'm speaking in broad strokes, so forgive me ahead of time, but in all sake of tactfulness for the ability to converse, there's something I find about a particular, let's say, something you could call like maybe Chinese or like Asian or something like that, where there's like the nuance in how they speak to each other, not just how it's like the sounds and the words themselves and the ability to communicate concepts and like the symbolic language in the beautiful way that it's done, but it also seems that there's like a nuance sometimes in the way that like business transactions are done. And at least what I'm specifically referring to is like the concept of like Guangzi. I'm talking about things that like Peter Lavenda talks about in his China trade book. There's something about like kind of like being circular, but I guess like you could see that in the West too, if a guy talks around a point, but I think in the West, there's something very forward and direct. Whereas in like the kind of like conceptual way of like framing language and idioms and conveying meaning, it's like weirdly puzzly, like almost like the I Ching or like bits of data that are flowing in a oddly chaotically poetic manner.
I always wanted to read Lavenda's book on that. Because that is interesting. It kind of goes back to the whole like magical speech where it's like you can't call something what it is. You have to talk around it.
Interesting. Well, Guangzi is, sorry, and then you'll go, I just want to say it's your social, like, do you have like good social capital? Do you have good charm? Do you have good social, like how good's your Guangzi? Oh, that guy knows the founder of MGM. Sorry, go ahead.
No, that's, I don't think I had anything else on that. It's,
you wanted to read the,
I wanted to read it. Yeah, that is interesting. I'd like to see his take on that. Slavenda is such a strange character.
That man, definitely.
He's lived a life.
Well, I consider him like up there with Joseph P. Farrell. You know, I put the two of them pretty much on the same.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they're together for me. It's just how it is. So anyways, like, the point being is that Farrell has the same Guangzi to me as Lavenda, in a sense, I guess. Also, the gravitas, almost, yes, to translate it awkwardly. But, like, the point is Lavenda, like, has such a deep knowledge of a lot of the darker and more, like, oddball, if you will, but also just world in general religion. Like, he wrote an entire book on the sex temples, the erotic temples in Java. Dude, that's so freaking cool. So, like, the guy has, he's like the weird Farrell.
And Farrell's, are they both Eastern Orthodox?
No, I believe Lavenda is, our buddy Jake, who we're gonna have to have a Six of Cups with you and I and Jake together. I think that we're gonna have to see that coming up, actually. But he has some interesting stuff. I'll let him bring up about what he thinks about Lavenda, because he does a much better job framing his own views than I do, obviously, because they're his views. But yeah, forecasting there. But yeah, do you have any other do you have any other like weird things that have been like that you've noticed lately? I want you to kind of like clear mind. I want you, I know you got something that's going to spark something. So I want you to step back and let lightning hit you here.
So since I'm kind of a recent convert into the more corporate world, I've been reading a lot of like efficiency books and things like that, you know, just the kind of things you need to learn how to work in an office environment, because I didn't know anything about that. And in doing that, I've kind of just started thinking about like what type of role you'd want to like what you want to do in life. And I've been thinking about how the internet is such a powerful device, and it's mostly used for like nonsense, basically, at this point, Instagram ones.
Oh yeah. But big distraction.
I'm trying to like pull all these pieces together, so forgive me for being scattered, but
it's all good, brother. It really is.
I feel like we, as a group of people who share similar interests, we kind of have this opportunity that I've been trying to like kick around ideas of how to kind of like how do we make the most of the internet, and how do we all try to succeed using it? You know, it's like, it's obvious that this is a way for people now to kind of like support themselves. And for a lot of people, it seems a lot more viable than, you know, cutting lawns or like washing dishes. Yeah. And you might be doing that your life, but you have the ability to do, you know, like maybe that's obviously not where your passion lies, you know? And it's, so I've been thinking about like the idea of like podcast collectives and like creative collectives kind of like centered on online. And I've talked to Eric from Artemisy about this a small handful of times. And we were kind of talking about, the idea of like a podcast collective, and like, what does that even, you know, like you share the costs of distribution with the participants.
It's a network.
Yeah. A network. But I try to, I'm looking at it more from like a, like an egalitarian kind of like equal sort of way, you know, where it's like, I don't want to be the boss of this thing, you know, like this is, I was kind of thinking about like making it, basing it off of the, like a fraternal structure, kind of like how you, people are elected offices and that's how it runs.
Interesting.
So it's like Freemasonry on the internet, but like, but not like just in the sense of like, you know, how do you give people responsibility? Like responsibility should be divided to people who want it and want to participate in it. And I think that that's interesting, kind of like how the offices are held in Masonry or other fraternal lodges. So it's like no one's doing something that they don't want to do. And because they want to do it and believe in it and put their time into it, you know, you tend to do your best. I think that's an interesting kind of like idea, but mostly it's just like, how do we all get up? Like, how do we all like live our best lives? You know, it's like, I've been thinking a lot about like the creative process of like artists and other creators and trying to like talk to them. You know, it's like, how do you deal with depression? How do you get out of your funk? How do you make, keep creating in the face of like not selling anything? You know, like,
I think it's going through a lot of us right now. I mean, you know exactly the process I've thrown myself into. I'm feeling a similar need to do something before I quote unquote explode.
Right.
I mean, no, I mean, that's exactly why I'm listening. I mean, like, when I can choose it, like if I'm at a place where I can't choose the music, right? Or if it's like a podcast, like it's got no agenda, it's got Wagner going, that's a whole other thing. But like, my own, the only thing I can do. So like I catch myself, cause you know, I do music. Like that's a thing I am, you know, I mean, it's just, I was a DJ. I love all music and I can only listen to six things. The, you understand how many times in a day it comes up that I get this urge, but it cannot be. So, I mean, like, we're all feeling this need, I think. A lot of the creatives, quote unquote, in our community, in our network of people who exchange ideas and podcasts and art and music and drone footage and numbers. Anyways, go on. But the point is that I think that we all feel that urgency. Yeah, that's what.
Yeah. And we all have like a wealth of experience to draw on and share too. And that's kind of the thing that I was, you know, it's like, I was kind of like most drawn to this is, you know, it's like, how do we, you know, it's like, we don't necessarily live in a world of scarcity. You know, it's mostly an illusion. So, you know, we don't need to be enemies and we don't need to fight with each other. We don't need to like look at each other as competitors, you know, like how do we draw off our own experiences and share that with other people? You know, it's like maybe someone understands an industry, you know, like maybe, you know, they can just like lend advice. Like maybe you're a, you know, like business law, like that'd be cool. If someone could like, if you could bounce questions off someone without having to pay $25 an hour or $80 an hour, ask questions.
A good community for this, I think, is being formed right now. And it's also a course you can take. I don't know how to even, it's like a life, I don't want to call it a lifestyle, but anyways, like, so Richard Grove is running a course called Autonomy, and it is teaching you in a participation-based live classroom once a week environment with 24/7 class interaction with constant different levels of interactions to get people immersed in not only just scheduling their time to be able to get in front of a camera and interact in the internet modern era way in a, you know, in a really easy manner, but then it builds to how do you build a website and, you know, how do you learn how to sell things and things like all these basic life skills that people need to be an adult in any area of their life. If you're a musician, if you're an artist, or if you're someone who's a programmer or a dude named Ben, whatever, you need to be able to sell your skills and be able to make yourself as useful as possible. And part of that is having that mindset that you're living out your purpose in the community, fulfilling your role. And so being able to be autonomous is the entire point and purpose of that. So I think there is a actual toolkit out there existing, extant right now. And I can, if anyone's interested in that, you will email me at occultfan@gmail.com. But I just want to make that point, Joe, that that exists. And you can talk with me off the air about that. But yeah.
That's interesting. I'd have to look into that. I know there's, I'm always skeptical because there's so many people selling the path, especially in like life coaching and self-help and like business coaching and things. Not to, it's not a knock at your guy because I know nothing about him, but it's,
this is true. You raised an excellent, that's, I would say that I do say the same thing. There's no one who's found the answer, but I would definitely say, but yeah, I would agree. No one's found the answer. In this case, he offers a set of skills that are for what I would consider any functioning adult. And it's like, instead of going to college and getting $1,000 a month, going to some place that's going to inevitably screw you. I mean, real talk. And then not let you have anything but a piece of paper without useful life skills. Instead, you can learn to live in this world, take about 12 weeks or so, take it at your own pace, but you have a certain amount of time to really get in there and get the class participation. The most of the benefit comes from interacting with other people and getting that real experience. You're not going to be able to hit the ball if you don't play the game. And we all want to play the game as well as we can so we can do the best as an individual so that we can lift others up because we are strong as individuals.
Right.
We have faith in each other that one another will lift each other up. You understand what I'm saying, of course.
I do. It's, you can definitely learn from classes and courses online. I don't mean to come off like a
guru, a teacher. We were talking about a teacher to show us the way. I would argue that Richard Grove background on Richard Andrew Grove, born early 70s-ish, around the time of the Pink Floyd-ish stuff. So the whole point is that he's a guy who's very smart, plays hockey, very charismatic young man, just good guy, helps people out. Really just a good average American citizen, very sharp, goes and works very hard, learns the lessons of entrepreneurship, goes to work for these big firms in New York City. Guess where? Oh, yes, of course. The World Trade Center. Oh, yes, you know. So he indeed has his own brush with this whole thing. So he's kind of tied into the whole, you know, the whole Uyghur vault. So anyways, he does not die that day, thank God. And now he is, you know, I think something happens that you can learn his story where he was exposing some kind of corruption in the company. Anyways, he was pretty much asked to leave because he was doing the right thing. So he's a legit, he's the kind of guy who gives up money in the pursuit of liberty and teaching people liberty. He ran Tragedy and Hope based off of the book Carol Quigley wrote, right? Carol Quigley was the main mentor of course, Rhodes Scholar. Who is this? Bill Clinton, right? So Carol Quigley wrote Tragedy and Hope, the most redacted versions you'll find today. The original versions, good luck. That's the one you want, though. So anyways, Carol Quigley is a Jesuit, enough said. He's a good, smart man. And wrote a book called Tragedy and Hope, exposing the real political nature of how power works in this reality here in the way. So, you know, Richard Grove ran a website named after Tragedy and Hope. And recently he has begun the autonomy course. It's been through its first enrollment process, its first, course, I guess, you know, season, I don't know. But yeah, anyway, so it's enough about that for now. Just that exists. That's to your point.
That's super interesting. That takes a whole different. That's just funny to see someone kind of involved in like the alt world go in that direction.
He's so very talented. They had the Red Pill Expo, and he was one of the main presenters. He was there after people like Richard Kiyosaki. He shared the stage with people like Richard Kiyosaki, Trump's friend who wrote Rich Dad, Poor Dad. He had Richard G. Edward Griffin, who wrote The Creature from Jekyll Island. I'm sure people listening to this must be familiar with that. If they're not, now you are. You go read it. It's just about where the Fed came from, because, you know, money. So anyways, the point is that Richard Grove is very well-respected, but not in a way that's just, like, culty or I don't know how I'm trying to say. Not, he has earned it. He is a legitimate, good, helpful creature on God's planet, to put it in that vernacular, because that's the way I'm trying to frame it, because it's true that way.
Nice. I'll definitely look him up. Nothing because it is hard to learn how to do everything. When you have to feel like to do anything, you need to learn.
That's like the hidden shit, man. That's like you talk to an occult fan. You want to talk about some occult skills? How about what he's teaching? Yes, he is the man in that way. That is awesome. Much respect. Yeah, so anyways, it's about time for me to get this show diddly diddly diddly. Like, I've been watching too much Simpsons, getting breaking into some Flanders there. Or maybe it's Homer doing Flanders. You watch The Simpsons at all recently, dude?
Not recently, no.
Right? When's the last time any of us have watched The Simpsons, man?
I couldn't even guess.
What? Oh, my God, right?
What? I couldn't even guess what season. Is it still on TV?
No. Yeah, maybe. Yeah, actually, probably. In the season I'm watching, it's the one where he mentions until the show becomes unprofitable. That's not at all the voice. But the point is that the first episode I started off watching was the second part of, I just picked a random season to start on. It was 7. It's the second part of Who Shot Mr. Burns. And of course, in the first episode I watched, they have an homage to Twin Peaks in it. Naturally. Because it's me. All right, buddy. Anything to say to the camera, which they cannot see?
You know, I'm still working on getting up my blog podcast thing, because I need to learn how to schedule time to do things. So maybe I will check out your boy, because I keep putting it off. But yeah, you can find me as The Bookmonger on Twitter.
That's an underscore, folks.
That's an underscore, the underscore, BOOKMONGER.
Yeah, half backwards speech there. Hey, man, got to talk about backwards records the next time you're on. I think that'll be cool. I would never cease to tire to speak about that stuff.
Did you ever get into psychedelic Rolling Stones album? Like in service to his Infernal Majesty or something. Like, I always want to say like His Infernal Majesty, like that goth band, but it's not. It's
My brain's doing now. I can't. No, I haven't heard it, actually. Really? I have a whole bunch of Rolling Stones records.
Check it out. It's super weird. It's like the Stones answer to Yellow Submarine, but
yeah, exactly.
But like way more experimental and weird.
I'll check it out when I can.
In 6 months or a year.
No, it's whenever I'm profitable, dude. So okay. I'm going the whole fucking, excuse my language, but I'm going the whole, yeah. Well, hey, I'm going the whole way.
Go the whole way.
There's no other choice. So anyways, with that said, I will bid you a fond fair evening, dude. And also, before we go, what's your favorite Super Nintendo game? Best one you like to play the most? Off the top of your head, go.
Oh,
right off the top. We're going with this
one. Okay, Super Smash TV.
Oh, man, dude. Bringing it back. Shit. All right. Yeah, that's right. You're a little older than me. Bringing it. All right, it's only fair if I answer the question, so I'll have to go it's got to be Legend of Zelda
Link to the Past?
Is it Link to the Past? Yeah.
The Ocarina of Time? Ocarina of Time.
No, it's Link to the Past. It's the third Zelda. It's the one before Link's Awakening, which my brain kept trying to spit out at the same time. as Link Between Worlds, which is the link. It's technically the follow up on the what's it called? The 3DS. They call it you can call it the Game Boy. It's now the DS. Yeah.
Donkey Kong Country 64, or that's Nintendo 64. I'm being crazy.
That's cool though. No, it's a good game. Yeah, it's good, man. You got that. My favorite 64 has got to be Majora's Mask. All right. With that, good night.
Good night.
And that was our show. Majora's Mask is my favorite N64 game. It really impressed me when it came with the expansion pack. That was just super cool. I loved the way that everything seemed like it was upgrading, and it was just like magical to see the way that you can't play this game on the system that can play all the other games. You have to have this expansion pack to play it. And now I look at things and it's like, now you can't do this if you don't have a cell phone. I'm like, holy shit. We are the video game. And I don't mean like this is a video game. Anyway, see, there's a difference. Anyways, thanks for listening. Y'all come back real soon, you heard? There's going to be a new show coming out. Six of Wands comes out this August 11th. So, yeah, thanks for checking out the show. And for those who stuck around, you got to hear the announcement. All right. Well, with that, I look forward to seeing you live in the Zoom. You'll look for the link in the Six of Swords Discord. I'll see you this Sunday. It's time to be specified. But we're looking around 9 p.m. So 9 p.m. this Sunday, August 11th, will be the first live Six of Swords. Six of Cup. No, wait. Six of Wands. So if you're hankering to get a live show where you can talk about different topics and hear me respond to certain things, that's what I'll be doing. So it's going to be like the Six of Swords is my art, spirituality, and healing one-on-one show, and the Six of Cups is a roundtable about pop culture and fun. Six of Wands is just me doing live taking of calls and things like that. So it's a live show, and it's also a way to interact and hear what you guys have to ask me and see where you're at and any questions and astrology and tarot and this, that, the other thing. So, hey, that's enough from me for now. So thank you for listening very much. I always appreciate it. And, donate if you get something out of it. And until then, see ya.